Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of Nature Now at kptz.org.
Hello, this is Deborah Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the week of August the 7th. This week, we are very pleased to have for you part two of an interview that we recorded last month with entomologist Richard Lewis. But before we get to our main topic, let's first hear the mystery sound of the week. Isn't this a cool sound? I can tell you right now that you'll never guess this one unless you are an entomologist yourself. It's just for you to enjoy. A big hint, not that it's going to help you much, is that it is an insect. We'll play it again at the end of the program and tell you what it is. Now on to our interview with Richard about the fascinating world of insects. Last month, we got so wrapped up in the wonders of insects in general that we did not get to describing much about the ones that are most important to us here on the Olympic Peninsula. So today, we're going to focus on that. What do you consider to be the most important insect species or insect families in our region, Richard?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I don't like to think of any particular insect as more important than the other. I think it's really important that we have a tremendous amount of diversity, and they're all kind of interrelated and work together. But some of the orders we mentioned last time, we call them the big four: the Coleoptera, the beetles, the Lepidoptera, the moths and butterflies, the Hymenoptera, the ants, the bees, and the wasps, and the Diptera, the flies. They're really the most common, the most prolific, and the most diverse groups of insects that we have. And if you're out walking around in the woods or down the road or around an aquatic area, those are the kind of insects that you'll most likely encounter. There are other groups like the dragonflies and damselflies that people notice quite a bit if they see them. And a lot of the hemipterans, or the true bugs, are noticed especially by gardeners. They're typically some of the insects we find that are feeding on our plants, either outside or inside. So I think, you know, the things that are the most beautiful, like the butterflies, get a lot of attention.
Uh-huh.
But some of these other kind of lesser known or lesser seen insects are really quite a gem to find and look at sometimes. So I think trying to be attentive towards some of the things you don't normally see is important. You know, the beetles and the butterflies and the flies and the wasps really kind of dominate the scene for what normal people consider insects.
Well, and some of those beetles are really beautiful if you have them in hand. Those green ones that have the metallic
sheen.
Yeah,
incredible iridescent colors. I have had several people come look at my insect collections in the microscope. A couple people that were artists and a jewelry maker all wanted to look at some of these specimens because of the incredible colors and shapes. And if you can magnify them and see them kind of blown up like that, it's even more incredible how they're all kind of put together. They do have tremendous variety of colors and sizes.
And some of the more drab beetles, you know, that are out at night if you're out walking, are doing amazing work in terms of decomposing.
Yeah, they're really important to the environment, and they do all kinds of things to help improve the soil, break down organic matter for plants. In fact, insects do a lot more aeration and soil disruption than earthworms or a lot of other organisms that you would think are pretty common there.
That's an amazing thing to think about, isn't it?
Yes.
Do we have much of a problem with non-native insect species in our area?
We do have issues with a lot of non-native insects, especially now with people doing so much traveling and some of the climate change issues going on. It's allowing insects to move into new areas. You know, we call them invasive or exotic species, and their impacts can really vary considerably. Sometimes we actually introduce insects to an area because we think it'll be beneficial. A lot of them are weed feeders, and they help maybe destroy weeds like Scotch broom, which is an invasive plant that we're having problem with in this area. You can get insects that will help get rid of that. But the problem is that when an insect is introduced to a new area, there's no natural predators or control mechanisms for it. So if it gets decent environmental conditions or a food source that it really likes, it can explode in numbers and become a huge pest problem. Uh-huh.
Yep. You were telling me earlier that we have several species of insects that are endemic to our area, not occurring anyplace else but on the Olympic Peninsula, right?
That's right. We do have some really interesting insects that live just here on the Olympic Peninsula. You know, we have a tremendous amount of different environmental areas, and insects being so small can establish themselves in a niche like that, where if those conditions aren't met in other places, they're unable to survive. So it's actually quite interesting. The National Park Service had a list of endemic insect species, and there were 8 different insects that were on that. Currently, that list is now down to 5, because 2 of them were beetles, which have now been discovered on Vancouver Island. So they're not solely here on the Olympic Peninsula anymore. And a 3rd butterfly actually started migrating down south and is now found in parts of Oregon and even some of the very northern parts of California. But aside from those 3 that have been kind of removed from the list, we also have another butterfly, Hulbert Skipper, which is endemic to this area. We have a grasshopper that lives up in the Olympic Mountains. It's a flightless grasshopper called the Olympic grasshopper. And then we have 3 different beetles. 2 of them are ground beetles in the family Carabidae, and they live in Olympic National Park. And then we have a tiger beetle, which is a highly collected beetle by different coleopterists or beetle people. It has been discovered out around Nia Bay. So we have different environments where these insects have been found, but the cool thing about them is that they've never been found in any other place around the world.
Oh, that is a really cool thing. So you've done a bunch of great insect field trips with the Jefferson Land Trust, and I have sadly not been able to join you on those. If we were to go on a walk today, what would we most likely see?
Well, if we were out walking around, it would be likely that we would run into at least a few flying insects. That would be some wasps and bees, depending on what the vegetation was around us. So one of the things that's interesting about insects is that they change, the types of insects that you're around change dramatically depending on the environment that you're in. So if we were out walking around a pond, I'm sure we would see some dragonflies and some damselflies. If we were walking around a field, we may see a few butterflies fluttering by around the edges of the field. When you're going down through the woods, oftentimes you'll see some ground beetles, some things on the ground that are running around, scurrying from one hiding place to another. If you're out in your garden around different flowers, you'll find a number of different types of insects, some that are feeding on the plants and some that are feeding on the pests that are on the plants. So we have both beneficial and non-beneficial insects that we see in gardens or out on flowers and other landscape ornamental type plants.
And we're seeing lots of different life forms too. Some of the most interesting to me are galls that I didn't realize are a separate species of wasp. You can tell the species of wasp by the galls that they create, right?
Yeah, and it's not just wasps. A lot of different types of insects will make galls, and they are distinctive. So you can use the gall to identify the actual insect that's making that gall. And they can be found in all different places, on the leaves of different trees, on the stems of certain plants. And that's a reaction to the plant from the insect feeding on it. And then the insect is down inside the gall where it's protected from being eaten or being attacked by other things. And once it develops, it will emerge from the gall as an adult and usually goes through its entire development right inside that one little spot. They are very interesting, and once you start looking around, you'll notice all different kinds of galls in different places.
Mm-hmm. usually doesn't damage the tree. It's just the tree's way of protecting itself while the insect is there.
Yeah, that's correct. In smaller numbers, they don't really cause any kind of problems at all, and they're not doing anything that will cause long-term issues with the tree. Once they emerge, the plant or the tree will just kind of go on as normal.
Uh-huh. So when you agreed to do this program with me, the thing that you most wanted people to understand was how important it is to conserve insect biodiversity and how imperiled many of our populations are.
Yeah, it's been a really scary thing going on in recent years. Again, you know, some of the things that we study the most or insects that cost us money or make us money, like honeybees or butterflies that people really like, get a lot of the attention. But as we've started looking into the problems of losses of insects, we've realized that it's really been across the board. We've seen a tremendous decline in insect populations of all different types within natural habitats, within agricultural systems. It's everywhere we've looked, we've found this problem going on. Currently, we have over 40% of all insect species being threatened with extinction. A lot of leading scientists believe we're actually moving into the sixth great mass extinction. One of the things that I try and talk to people about that I think most everyone, if you're over 30 or so or older, you might be able to relate to is that when we were younger and you went on a drive somewhere, you had to always wash your windshield off because of all the crushed insects on it. Or if you looked at the grill of the car in the summertime, it was just coated with insect wings and insect bodies. And, you know, I think if people look at it and realize the last time they've had to wash their windshield off because of insects on it, it's probably been a little while.
That's such a simple indicator, but it really brings it home. I remember that too, just going, oh my God, you know, you have to stop every hour or so to clean the windshield.
If you were filling up with gas, that was part of the deal, was just cleaning off the windshield. And, you know, I think that's something that just general population can really relate to and understand. And as we've mentioned, you know, insects being such an integral part of the environment, doing things like decomposing organic matter, breaking down wood so it's a usable form for plants to grow on, pests being eaten by beneficial insects, and insects as a food source for all sorts of other animals, those are the things that are going down. So if insect populations are crashing, bird populations are crashing, and that's what we're seeing. The bird populations that are most dependent on insects for food are also suffering and going down in numbers. So it's something that's being looked at more closely now. But one of the big problems is that we have very little baseline information on how many insects there should be in a particular area.
And we've lost some species that we never realized that we had, right?
Certainly. We're losing certain species all the time because there's so many that we don't know about. There's a number of them that we'll never even understand that were there to begin with. So it's a really kind of scary thing, and I hope that, you know, here on the peninsula, we have such an environmentally conscious group of people out here, and we have such a pristine area that we live in, that it may not be something that people recognize as much right in this area, but hopefully it's something that we can start becoming aware of and trying to take actions to prevent the rate of decline and future issues with declining insect populations.
What do you think is the primary reason they are declining?
There's a number of things that have been kind of pegged as drivers for the decline. The biggest problem is land use. So that means that, you know, through intensive agriculture and urbanization, insect land has been used up and it's fragmented. So we've lost a lot of populations because of that. In combination with land loss and habitat destruction, we've also increased pollution levels all over the place. Mainly pesticide use and fertilizer runoff has created problems for insects getting by. There's a lot of biological factors that have added to the problem, introduced species, you know, like we talked about, exotic species or invasive species competing with native species, causing them to stress out more, and then they become more susceptible to pathogens and parasites, which are being moved around at a more alarming rate. Things like climate change have also been kind of indicated in that, but at this point, for the most part, hasn't been a huge problem as far as an issue with the declining insect populations. But with all those other factors taking place, it's believed that climate change could exacerbate it in the future if it continues the way it is now.
Uh-huh. What things can we do to try to help the situation?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we can do as homeowners, as gardeners, as land conservers. The most important thing is helping to create and preserve habitat for insects. A lot of what's being done out there by groups like the Xerces Society, who are out there kind of defending for native pollinators, they do things like working on planting native habitat, native plants and trees along insect corridors, so building up habitat in roadways and along power lines actually will allow insects to move through those corridors and hopefully recolonize or rebuild in areas that we've lost them. I think, you know, on a larger scale, we need to completely consider large-scale changes in agricultural practices, specifically reducing the amounts of chemical inputs we put into agriculture, and creating more of a balance. So as I mentioned during the last episode, you know, it's really important to maintain all those little insects, all the more innocuous insects. It creates a balance out there in nature. If we disrupt one part of it, it kind of ripples throughout all their areas. And
the problem with insects is that we don't recognize them nearly as well as we do other creatures.
Yeah, and a lot of the times what we want to do is get rid of the insects that we do recognize.
Yep.
So spraying chemicals and wiping out some insects will actually cause other populations to explode, and some of the good insects that we want around take a lot longer to recolonize and build up again. So we're getting rid of the good guys and encouraging a lot of the bad guys.
And something else you're telling me that would really help the situation is to have more entomologists, right? That there are a lot of career opportunities for entomologists.
Well, I'm always trying to push for my own career a little bit. You know, there has been a big decline in insect studies and entomologists. There's a lack of funding, and especially in areas of taxonomy, which is the study of the different groups of insects and understanding what types of insects are in certain places. Anything we can do to help encourage young people getting involved in entomology to develop some baseline data that we can use, especially for non-economic species of insects, could really be helpful in the future.
Yeah. So we should probably end with telling people where they can go, some good websites to find out more about insects or identify the ones that they find.
Yeah, there's a lot of really great information online. There's some really good books that are available these days as well, but obviously, especially with younger people, the internet is a great place for finding information. I think any university, especially agricultural universities like Washington State University, has phenomenal information on insects in general. Oregon and University of Oregon both also have really good websites. There's a group called iNaturalist. That's a really cool website that allows you to post pictures of insects that you have, and then it's peer-reviewed throughout the groups that are on that. It's a great way to learn a little bit more about certain insect species, kind of get reaffirming information about trying to identify certain insects.
Uh-huh, that's great.
Here in Washington, there's a really cool website called Go Hiking, and they have a lot of insects that you might see when you're out walking around. And then the National Park Service also has some really great information on local populations of insects that you might see?
Well, we have run out of time once again. We're going to have you come back, do a monthly special on insects.
Yeah, well, I'd love to try and promote them as much as I can anytime, and it's been a real pleasure to have an opportunity to be here to talk about them.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really enjoyed it.
I wonder if maybe I could close with a quick quote from E.O. Wilson. It's E.O. Wilson is a Harvard professor who is famous for studying ants, but has done a lot of work with insects. And he had a great quote that says, "If mankind were to disappear, the world would regenerate back to the rich state of equilibrium that existed 10,000 years ago. If insects were to disappear, the environment would collapse into chaos. So let's help protect the little guys and keep our world a great place to live for future generations."
Oh, that's a great quote. Thank you so much. There are some great upcoming natural history events to tell you about this week. The Olympic Peninsula chapter of the Audubon Society has a field trip planned this Friday, August 9th, from 8 a.m. to noon, looking for local land birds in the Dungeness Recreation Area. For more information, please go to olympicpeninsulaaudubon.org.
The next day, Saturday, August 10th, come explore the new Chetamoka Trail and bird along the way with Admiralty Audubon. This will be the first of a three-part series of walks exploring the trail and highlighting how many cool birds can be found in our neighborhoods. Meet at the new totem pole at the Northwest Maritime Center at 8:30 a.m. and plan to walk for about 3 hours. Go to admiraltyaudubon.org for more details.
Then in the evening, from 6 to 9 p.m., join the Port Townsend Marine Science Center for the last of their great summer puffin cruises offered this year. If you were able to listen to Nan's program last month, you will know something about the wonderful things that you might see and learn. Go to ptmsc.org for more information and to get tickets.
Lastly, the Olympic chapter of the Washington Native Plant Society has a field trip planned to the beautiful Lyre River Conservation Area west of Port Angeles next Wednesday, the 14th of August. Go to WNPS.org and search for the Olympic Peninsula chapter for more details and to sign up for this.
And here's our mystery sound again. It's a Braconid wasp's calling song. I found this cool sound on the U.S. Department of Agriculture's research site, where they have lots of fascinating information on all kinds of things, including insects. Braconids are a large and widely distributed group of small parasitic wasps, which occur just about everywhere, including our area. They are usually black or brown in color, and the female lays eggs on other species of insects, usually the caterpillars of moth species. After hatching from the eggs, the larvae enter the host and consume it. When they mature, they burrow out of the host and pupate in silken cocoons attached to the host's body. Some species are used to control agricultural pests. And that's it for KPTC's Nature Now for the second week of August. Thanks very much to our sound engineer, Nora Petrich, for her usual fine editing and for helping me share upcoming events. And thanks to all of you for listening. Remember, if you missed any of our program or want to listen again, this program will be rebroadcast at 5 p.m. on Thursday, 12:30 on Saturday, and available as a podcast in a week or so at kptz.org. Closing music is Moth by Jethro Tull. As always, happy trails.
Oh, the leaden window opens, but you move the dancing candle flame. And the first months of summer, suicidal came. Oh, suicidal came, and the new breeze chattered in its Maybach tenderness, sending water lilies sailing. As she turned to get her dress, and the long night awakened, and we soared on powdered wings, circling our tomorrows.
chasing shadow slipping in the magic lantern slide. Creatures of the candle on the night's light rising, dipping and weaving, flutter through the golden needle's eye. In our haystack madness, butterflies stalking on the springtide high, oh, on the springtide high.